afternoon is continue the discussion about new GTLDs. And then at the very end, we had some GAC business to take care of. And we can go back into a short closed session just to deal with those items. Regarding new GTLDs, let's see whether at this point we are able to begin exchanging about some of the topics that we just heard about and had questions about before the break, and see whether it's possible for us to formulate thoughts or the beginnings of advice that we might want to give on those topics that would go into our communique this week. We did have a fair number of questions around process and timing for current elements, but I would like to see whether we are in a position to begin formulating advice on those same topics at this point, so we can see how that develops. In this session, if there's time and interest, we can include a GAC discussion or exchange about the IOC and Red Cross, and also the point we wanted to raise about text that we provided for the applicant guidebook being modified and us not being informed about that before it was published in the guidebook and not being given the opportunity to assess the extent to which that changes the meaning or the impact of that text. So with the IOC and Red Cross, we are going to be discussing this with the GNSO tomorrow, and there is a document that they have provided that's part of your materials that that is in preparation for that exchange and that follows a preparatory phone call that was held a few days ago on that. And as I say, with the applicant guidebook, this is something that we have on our agenda with the board as well. So these issues will still be raised, and we will have an opportunity to discuss those as a GAC as well, because we still have those items in the agenda. So, are there any comments on how we proceed? Otherwise, I suggest we run through the topics, and I would like to test out the degree of readiness that we have to actually provide or begin to consider providing advice on those topics. Netherlands, please.
Thank you, Heather. I wanted to propose something which is basically an idea from Hubert, but he is busy somewhere else. And given the fact that we had a lot of questions now, and we have not got back with, let's say, a kind of timeline, and then you will get the answer. What Hubert suggested was that we could make this six or seven bullet points and just give them now to staff to give and to at least expect an answer from the ICANN board in our Tuesday session. I mean, I'm a little bit, to be honest, a little bit frustrated about asking, let's say, two or three times. Other members have the same impression, and not getting back in between why some deadline was not reached, for example. So we just, again, completely in the middle of confusion for the next steps. So one thing would be if we just propose these questions to the board and say, okay, give us please an answer on Tuesday or else some later. Thanks.
Thank you. I think that's a good suggestion. In speaking to Karen and Amy, they were going to compile those questions and convey them back to the board, but I also think it's useful for us to formulate some points or questions and provide those today, at the end of the session today, to the board to help get those responses back before we conclude our GAC meeting. So, EU Commission, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the idea coming from Germany, which has been relayed by the Netherlands, was also your idea, as understood, is excellent. Perhaps what we could do is understand the member of ICANN staff who were here before the coffee break, well, the break, because there was no coffee, but anyway, before the break. sorry, I'm Italian, so for me the lack of coffee is really an important matter, but perhaps what we could ask is if ICANN staff could, as they're doing, write down the questions, then show them to us in the course of today so that we can double-check that there was a common understanding of what those questions were, because this would allow us, perhaps now is not the right moment to make a round of two ourselves to check which were the questions, etc., and understand there are other points that we may want to discuss. So that might be an approach that would allow us to proceed and send to the board the questions even by the end of today, if the staff is in a position to write down these six or seven questions and provide them to us quickly. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, okay, let's do that. Let's make a request to Karen and Amy to provide us with the list that they're going to prepare and ask whether we can have that in the next few moments or before the end of today. In the meantime, then, perhaps we can have a discussion about the IOC and Red Cross and the applicant guidebook, and then if there's opportunity, then we can refer to that list or begin creating our own, okay? All right, so I just want to confirm that request will be made. Yes, nodding, okay. All right, so on the topic of the IOC and Red Cross, I will look to the leads on this, which I believe are the UK and the United States. Perhaps if there are introductory points you would like to make regarding the state of play, and then we can see comments on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to remind colleagues, it came out probably just before we all got on planes, but I did send out an update notice with the report from the GNSO drafting team so that we all have their report to prepare ourselves for the discussion tomorrow afternoon with the GNSO. And what they have done, they did identify some loopholes, if you will, in the board's resolution for the protection of the IOC Red Cross Red Crescent names at the top level, which, as you will recall, we had asked for protection both the top and the second. And with the board's resolution in Singapore, we felt we had covered the top, if you'll recall. And we then transmitted the proposal to the GNSO as per the resolution with a set of questions and answers that we thought would help guide the GNSO's work. But what they did identify for us on the call and in their drafting team report was that actually they felt that there were some inadequacies that were kind of built into the resolution. It wasn't as complete as it needed to be, and so they have focused their initial effort on closing those loopholes so that if the council, the goal is to have the GNSO council approve their proposed fixes so that that can be communicated to the board by the GNSO. We, the GAC, would similarly say we support that and that hopefully it would be accepted by the board and then it would be implemented in the guidebook before the applications get, you know, posted and start to get processed. So we have the protections at the top level. My understanding now, and we'll learn more from the GNSO tomorrow, is they are now turning to the second level. Mark, if you want to add something, please feel free.
You okay?
Yes, thanks very much. That is essentially the situation. There is less urgency with regard to the second level because obviously that is going to kick in really at the time of deployment of the round, following the consideration of the round. So that work will and the options available with regard to second level will it's starting now, so that's encouraging, and will continue. As Suzanne said, with regard to the top level, some things need to be finalized, but overall I think the progress is very good, and the joint working with the GNSO through this cooperation between the GAC and the GNSO through this working group has been very effective, and it's a model of cross-community working under the direction of the board. So I think that's all I need to say at this point. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? EU Commission, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, if the US could confirm, Suzanne, the document that you were referring to right now is the IUCRC drafting team status report of the 29th of February 2012. Okay, thanks. And just for confirmation, because I must admit this is not yet completely clear to me, the drafting team that is the author of this report is composed of members of the GNSO. So the GAC does not formally participate in the drafting team. Is that correct? Just for my information to have a complete picture.
Thank you for that question. United States.
Thank you. Technically, yes, it is correct. However, we had the invitation was extended to us to participate. I think in view of our workloads, all of our respective workloads, we were not able to do so. But I personally felt very confident that the representatives from for the IOC and the Red Cross, Red Crescent, did participate. They are members of the drafting team. So they have helped answer questions, they've helped respond, and Mark and I have both reached out to both organizations to confirm that they are very comfortable with the proposed language. So that has sort of generated, at least for me, a certain level of comfort that had they not been participants, I might not otherwise have. And I did want to concur with Mark. I do think it's important for us to convey, this may be the last time we talk about this before we meet with the GNSO and before we meet with the board, but I do hope that GAC colleagues share our view that this has been a very interesting experiment in collaborating with the GNSO, and I think we can applaud their and commend them for the time and energy they've actually directed to our request. And it, to me, it sends a very good signal that there are other ways other than sort of rigid structures where we can be very flexible with other parts of the community in advancing a goal that we have, and that I think we should be quite grateful that they have come to also share that goal and are working out at perhaps a different level of detail than we had. So I do think we want to probably signal that to both the GNSO and to the board, that this has been a very positive experiment. Thanks.
Thank you very much, U.S. EU Commission, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the U.S. for the clarification. The Commission is, we were not a member of the drafting team, so we trust the colleagues in the GAC that followed for what concerns, what was the level of positiveness, how positive was the experience. If you believe that the experience was positive, we have absolutely nothing contrary to signal that. I think this kind of experience have to be multiplied. We, quite frankly, we at the Commission, as I believe other colleagues, we sometimes would like to be more engaged in other policy development processes, but quite frankly, it's difficult to take positions in those contexts because we need to go back home and check, etc. So if this particular experience at the cross-constituencies work has been positive, it would be very good to signal it. I do have, however, one question, again, for clarification. I read the report, and this is why I wanted to confirm. The report I read was actually the correct one. I understand that for what concerns protection at the second level, the drafting team is identifying a number of questions for further reflection. And one of the questions, the first one, is, in fact, should Olympic and or Red Cross names be reserved at the second level in all new GTLDs? Now, this strikes me as something which goes very much beyond what a drafting team should do. This is a kind of political decision that is normally taken in other at other levels. So I was a bit confused to see this kind of question because I thought there was already some kind of consensus on this particular point. Whether positive or negative, I don't know, but there was some kind of consensus.
I have Portugal and then United States. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Italy, you were next.
Okay, I have an observation concerning how we spend our energies and time. It is surprising to know this story that was decided in Singapore, and then how long it took to arrive to a final decision. And I really hope that this can be solved as soon as possible. But we are almost arriving at the deadline when will be published the list of the proposals. And then us, the GAC representative, have been receiving pressures. But all those organizations within UN, within other public and known like OECD. OECD are making pressure in every country. And they say, why Red Cross and Olympic Committee say, and why you do not protect us? Apart from arguing about the legal value of the protection that may be different from those and the others. But the real point is that we should be prepared to discuss with ICANN cases in which someone wants to apply for OECD, just to make an example, because we have no time now start discussing and protecting at the same level of OECD and of Red Cross and committee, Olympics committee. So this is the real problem, a criteria that the GAC, if consulted by these organizations, have to say something. They won't we say something on these cases. I don't know if many of you received this input from the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Italy, Portugal, please.
By coincidence, my intervention is a little bit related to the concerns that Italy just expressed. But I want to voice them in a very different way. And as a matter of fact, repeating what I have said in the past two GAC meetings. We, as representative of governments, at least in the case of Portugal, are not supposed to act on these sort of situations on specific ad hoc basis, but on abstract conceptual basis, on the terms of what is actually the grounds on which we should act towards one or another organization. I see many organizations in the world that should deserve the same treatment that we are trying to achieve for the Olympic, for the International Olympic Committee and for the Red Cross. So I don't have anything to against in terms of policy setting for a pragmatic point of view of trying to break ground with particular clear cases. But I certainly would not be happy to finish there. So if we find the solution to this case, it should, in our opinion, be generalized to other intergovernmental, international organizations that also deserve the same treatment. Thank you.
Thank you, Portugal. United States.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, let me take some colleagues back a little bit in time. When we first began to consider the proposal from the IOC and the Red Cross, we did quite a bit of due diligence around the table in determining that these two organizations, unlike the IGOs, these two organizations appear to be the only two organizations in the world that benefit from two levels of legal protection. The first is international treaty, and the second is protection under national law in multiple jurisdictions. Multiple. So that's a two-level test. And we discussed this at some length. We did due diligence, and in our assessment, we determined that no other entity, including the IGOs, actually could meet that standard of these two levels of protection. So there has been history here. There has been discussion in and among the GAC. And that was the bar we set quite deliberately, because if you will all recall, there was a strong concern expressed when we even first started to discuss this, that if we were seeking to open the door to these two, were we not opening the door, the slippery slope, the camel's nose under the tent, all of those things, to anybody seeking special protection at the top and the second levels? And we all debated this at some length to say, no, we felt fairly confident that these were two quite unique entities that benefited from these two levels of legal protection. And that makes them unique and distinct from the IGOs. So I hope that answers your question, because that actually is, that theory is what guided the development of our position on the IOC and the Red Cross. We're all very mindful because, in fact, we're all, as governments, we are members of these IGOs. And so we're mindful of their position. It's been my understanding informally that the letters have, in fact, from the IGOs have gone to the board directly. I believe we were copied, but many of these IGOs are, in fact, observer members to the GAC. And so it's quite interesting that as observers, they've had full access to the email list and full access to all of our deliberations as we were developing our position on the IOC and the Red Cross. So just speaking personally, I would have expected to have heard from them quite a long time ago, but that's their prerogative. Nonetheless, this is why we are here at this particular point in time. I understand the letter has gone. My informal understanding, Chair, is that ICANN may well come to the GAC and ask us to help them understand how to respond. I think we may well get questions tomorrow afternoon from the GNSO, because they apparently are trying to understand, well, what does this letter from the IGOs mean? Do we need to treat them the same way as the Red Cross and the IOC? Both Mark and I answered that question on the call last week, but I anticipate as the council is here face-to-face, there will be more questions. So actually, we did cross that bridge some time ago, and I'm not sure there is sufficient time to revisit it or on what legal basis we would revisit it. Thank you.
Thank you, United States. Portugal, I can put you in the speaking order, but you're, I have other requests to speak as well. So, first of all, regarding the board asking the GAC to provide further advice or clarification on this, I'm informed that we will receive that request momentarily. We just have not yet, so that will be coming. And then the issues now that are being put to the GAC are that when we considered this earlier, we put forward protection for the IOC and Red Cross on an exceptional basis. So if there are comments to those particular aspects, then we can perhaps move forward in the discussion. So next I have UK, then Portugal, Mexico, and Switzerland.
Yes, thank you, Chair. We do find ourselves, I readily grant, in a rather awkward situation. The negotiations with regard to, well, initially it was primarily the IOC, were very detailed, sometimes quite hard-fought negotiations. There was obvious concern, as the US has explained, that there was a risk of the floodgates being opened, if you like. We did explain that, so I'm not going to repeat what the US has said. We achieved progress with regard to the IOC and then with regard to the Red Cross, Red Crescent as well. So we do risk this, you know, perhaps unraveling if we try to develop this as a much broader initiative. My thought was that we do note this concern as the GAC, and we could communicate this in the communique. But if we are going to receive this request from the board, that does change the situation. So I think it's appropriate for the GAC to acknowledge the aims and intentions of the letter from the legal advisors on behalf of the IGOs, and we should give this due consideration in the light of what the board is asking us to do. Thanks.
Thank you, UK. Portugal, please.
What I'd like to say is that first, of course, I don't want to reopen the discussion of the amplitude of the criteria that was considered for having this treatment. What I think, however, that it's unnatural for an organization representing governments to define criteria to be applied on the basis of the names of persons or organizations. It should be on the basis of their characteristics. Because we may say we worked hard, we didn't find more than two that fulfill the criteria, but at the end, what should be written and open to any other organization that fulfills that criteria is the criteria that singled out those organizations. So Portugal is in favor of continuing to pursue the kind of protection we are trying to achieve for IOC and for Red Cross. We were in that movement from the very beginning, but we think the criteria has to be defined abstractly, even if so narrowly that it applies to very few organizations. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification, Portugal. Okay, next we have Mexico, then Switzerland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you allow me, I'll speak in Spanish, considering that we have translation.
From the Mexican point of view, as Susan and Mark mentioned, these two organizations are protected both at an international and a local level, a national level. Therefore, we understand that there are few organizations that could enter in this aspect. In this sense, we deem it important that we continue the work on the protection of the second level. Likewise, as the comments from Europe were commenting, even if this is not a criterion that the GAC could take for all the applications that could come with this sense of protecting their name in being considered within an international treaty, it is necessary that the GAC defines the treatment to be given to these applications, considering that they will continue receiving these type of applications to the GAC. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mexico. Switzerland.
Thank you. I would confer with Portugal that we should have more clear rules or criteria, whatever you call them, because I guess we are not the only country, but we are also, our foreign ministry is approached when there are delegations to these organizations by institutions that ask for a similar protection like what has been granted to the IOC and the Red Cross. And as we have one point in the principles, in the GAC principles of 2007, is that intergovernmental organizations should be protected. The question is how, to what extent, with what means should they be protected? Are the things enough for whom, for which organization, the provisions in the guidebook and the independent objector and all these means that there are these enough? For which ones are they not enough and their names should be included? And we are also not fully clear about what we are supposed to answer to these organizations that ask us as member states to defend their interests in the GAC. So we would also have an interest in having more clarified criteria that we could then convey to these organizations if they ask us. And just with regard to what my colleague from the US has said, I mean, the UN institutions, they're also all based on an international treaty. So this is also not, I don't know, but maybe you could have some more additional information what the difference is between the international treaty on which the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee is founded than the UN institutions. And the same about the national, what is so particular about the national the national status in national law, because all these treaties of intergovernmental organizations, they are also reflecting that they have effects on national laws. The WTO and WIPO treaties are also reflected in national law. So we would be interested in having, in
seeing more clearly, because to be honest, we are not really able to give a sustainable answer to these organizations that confront us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Switzerland. Are there any further comments on this topic? EU Commission, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I must say that although I do understand, and up to a large extent, I do share the concerns that have been raised by, I believe, Portugal and Switzerland, it must also be recognized that, as it has been said, this topic is not a new topic. And it was discussed before. I do remember personally plenty of emails from UK, from Mark, on this topic. The GAC was kept fully informed about the whole process of development of this particular policy. Now, we may debate, and certainly people out there are debating, and in the future there will be debates whether this is a good or a bad choice. But I think this point needs to be made, that there was a debate, there was a long process, and to be absolutely honest, and I say this in the knowledge that there are many people who are not members of the GAC here, which is absolutely fine, I can say that the Commission did not follow this particularly closely, because we all need to prioritize, and we entrusted, so to speak, we implicitly entrusted other colleagues in the GAC to follow this. So again, sympathizing with the points that are being raised by Portugal and by Switzerland, it doesn't seem, to be very honest, it doesn't seem entirely fair to me now to question a process, a discussion that has been ongoing for months, for many, many months. Now, more on the substance. My understanding for what concerns the question by Switzerland, my understanding, but the US or the UK can correct me, that one of the criteria was not whether a particular organization was a treaty-based organization. As Thomas correctly points out, there are many, almost all IGOs are treaty-based, but whether there was a treaty out there that protected the name of that organization. Now, in the case of the Olympic Committee, of the International Olympic Committee, I am aware of the Nairobi Treaty, which protects all the symbols related to the Olympics. Actually, a former university colleague of mine did his whole PhD thesis on the Nairobi Treaty. Don't ask me how you can do that and remain sane, but he did it. So I do know there is a treaty-based protection for that name, and I understand there is also for international, for the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement. Having said all of this, yes, we may consider for a subsequent round, perhaps, whether we should find a more generic criteria, although, again, I understand the criteria that have been selected are generic, which is protection under international law, protection for the name under an international treaty, and protection at the national level. We may refine those criteria, but we also need to be pragmatic. I don't think that we will be able to refine them before the close of the application period now. And I'm not sure we want to reopen the applicant guidebook, to be very honest. I'm not sure we want to reopen the applicant guidebook now. One point that has been raised to us, to the Commission, by a number of stakeholders, which is something where I believe the GAC may now help, is the issue of the confusing similarity. Whether not only the names Red Cross may be registered at the top level or the second level, but also all combination that may be confusingly similar should be protected somehow. And there, perhaps, there is the possibility for the GAC to avoid to go a bit too far, let's say, and make it clear that we want protection for one particular string that is clearly associated with the Red Cross, or two or three or four, how many of them are, which is associated with the Red Cross in the different languages. I mean, the protection of the different languages should be there. What perhaps we may avoid is a situation in which we would end up protecting, for example, a combination of Olympic with something else, which we may want to allow because it's not, clearly it's not confusable with the Olympic, with the Olympic Games. So that is a compromise that we might strike. But I don't think, I understand this is not the intention of Switzerland and Portugal. Portugal was very clear on this. I don't think that we can reopen that topic right now. That would be difficult in practice, and as I said, quite honestly, a bit unfair towards the colleagues that have been devoted a lot of time on this, fully informing the GAC, as well as the US correctly points out, fully informing all the international organizations which are observers of the GAC, of the whole process. Thank you.
Thank you, EU Commission. So at this point, at a minimum, it looks like we will need to restate or clarify the basis on which the previous advice that the GAC provided was given. And then to the point about considering whether the GAC would advise that protection should be offered to these additional organizations, I do not see agreement, and I do not see that we can come to agreement at this point. However, when we receive the letter from the board, as I say, we can expect to restate at least or clarify the advice and the rationale for why we have made a prior decision, and if there are further questions there related to this, then we can try to develop a response to that. I have Australia, then United States.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that excellent summary, which makes my contribution much easier. First, to concur with the views of European Commission colleague that I wouldn't see reopening the guidebook. It's practical at this time. But that does not mean that there are no protections available for IGO names, nor that the GAC can't do anything about them. As we've briefly touched on already, the GAC has the ability to issue early warnings and advice on contentious or sensitive strings. Part of the reason the GAC argued so hard for this ability was the difficulty of figuring out all potentially sensitive or contentious strings in advance. It's simply not practical. So it would seem that IGO names, for at least some people around the table, and potentially all, would fall into that category. So it is certainly open to the GAC to issue early warnings or advice if IGO names are applied for. If the GAC, just to think through the options, if the GAC did want to do something up front, it is possible that it could flag an intention or a possibility of that happening up front.
Thank you, Australia. I have United States, Norway, and Senegal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, both the EU Commission and Australia, for your interventions. I think EU Commission has helpfully pointed out our criteria had nothing to do with whether the entities were a treaty-based organization or not. And that is a very, very key distinction. But the document that fleshed out the rationale in a little bit more length than what we originally proposed to the board is in the September of 2011 letter that we sent to the GNSO Council. So we can just resurface that. There is a section that says rationale and basis for joint GAC GNSO support. And so we've clearly explained what our rationale was. It is the protection at these two distinct levels, and that's what makes the difference. Thank you. And I do concur with Australia, sorry, that there do exist a number of means and mechanisms that the IGOs can avail themselves of, not the least of which is the GAC, early warning system and objection process, as well as legal rights objections. So to the extent any of their names are, in fact, trademarked and enjoy that protection, they have that opportunity to submit a legal rights objection. Thank you.
Thank you. United States, Norway, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just also want to comment on what the European Commission and Switzerland touched upon. I think we just have to admit that the GAC were not able to prioritize everything that was in the GAC principles of 2007. And this was an issue that, of course, not were solved, sort of made concrete proposals about that kind of protection. On the other hand, of course, when we did these discussions on protecting IOC and the Red Cross, of course, we discussed that it could potentially make precedence. And, of course, we would not like that to make precedence, but, of course, from the outside, then, of course, they would sort of have the impression that these are making precedence, even if we decide for ourselves that this should not make precedence. So we might have a problem here. But also, as Australia commented, as a colleague from US just said, the IGOs are not without protection because they could, of course, claim the protection towards ICANN in that process and are not sort of limited to specific support from the GAC, they could then claim their rights towards the ICANN in these processes. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Norway, Senegal, please.
Thank you, Chair. I will speak in French. Donc concernant la I would also like to have clear criteria to avoid stating a precedent and to provide maximum protection to these organizations because they do need it. And now talking about the observers in GAC, I would like to underline the case of Africa, when it was put forward letter to GAC, we were answered that anything related to the new GTLDs is on the new application date, that nothing had been considered in these guidelines to protect our continent. So the presentation is open now. I believe that we cannot take two actions based on the fact that there is or there is not an international treaty. We have to be egalitarian in relation to that. And if the ICANN reference is applying the guide, we should have a new version of the guide that will support the protection not only of international organizations, but also geographical domain names, such as it happens with Africa.
This topic for today. What I propose we do next is that we have a brief exchange about the change to the text that was added to the applicant guidebook that the GAC developed at the Dakar meeting. We do not yet have a response or a list of questions back from staff. So it looks like we will need to try to obtain that list this evening, send it to the GAC list, and if we can find time tomorrow, earlier in the day, if possible, to confirm those questions, and then we can relay those back to the GAC. So we will endeavor to handle that issue that way. And then we will have a short closed session at the end of today, to finish up some GAC business that we did not conclude on this morning. So, regarding the changes to the text, to the draft applicant guidebook, a few of you did comment to the GAC email list about this, and so have a particular interest in this. Are there comments that some would like to make? I don't think there's a particular lead on this issue, but I think it's a really fundamental procedural issue and also relates to communications between this committee and the board. Okay, United States, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to catch the attention of my colleague from Germany, but he's busy doing something else. It was Hubert Schottner who had so astutely pointed out the change to all of us, because I'm not sure we were mindful of it. I do think it's well within our rights, if you will. We developed consensus text that outlined what we consider to be the agreed approach toward GAC objections. We submitted it, and it wasn't for several weeks, I guess, that we find out inadvertently, back channel, we certainly didn't get a formal notice that the text was amended. So I think it is worth our while to find out on what basis. I can only guess that it was amended by staff, since we've seen no instruction from the board to the staff, but it would be useful to surface that. And I think to put a marker down that when and if, and especially on a subject as important as that subject was, that the staff assesses a need to amend it, then they have an obligation, I believe, to come back to the source of the text. And I think we probably need to flag that for the GAC, for the board, I'm sorry, and to request that the staff amendment be deleted. And if the board would disagree, then it would be very helpful to have an understanding of why. And I'd like to make sort of a related suggestion. It may not be a good one, so feel free to shoot it down. We also meet with the new GAC board working group on the ATRT recommendations. And I suggest that we add this sort of circumstance to that agenda, because I consider them our partners, and I think we need to keep flagging things like this that occur and urge them to work with us to avoid them, and not just minimize them, I mean avoid them. I don't think it's appropriate for the staff to come back to the GAC and amend our text without alerting us, without explaining why they feel it necessary, so we could actually tell them whether we would agree or not. It's just a suggestion that we take it up additionally with the ATRT GAC board.
Thank you, United States. So we have a proposal that we inform the board that they have an obligation to come back to the GAC in such instances, and that the GAC, in fact, requests deletion of that text from the guidebook, and that the board GAC working group related to the accountability and transparency recommendations take that up. So next, I have EU Commission, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies. Thank you, Madam Chair. Allow me to, first of all, thank Germany, who spotted this problem, and I think, quite frankly, that it would have gone unnoticed if it hadn't been for Hubert. As the Commission said on the GAC mailing list, but allow me to repeat it for the benefit of everyone, on procedure, in terms of procedure, we find it will be even stronger than the U.S. has been. I find it quite unacceptable that the GAC is asked to provide a text, and this text is changed without our knowledge. That is certainly doesn't help the good relationship between the GAC, between governments, public authorities, and the ICANN staff and the community. So I would certainly support, we would certainly support a clear question to the board or to the or to the staff to clarify what has happened. Now, as we also wrote in my email, to the GAC list, I must admit that we still have some problems understanding whether this is also a problem of substance, which means whether the modifications in the guidebook that unacceptably, I repeat, have been put without our knowledge, but whether those modifications actually put the GAC in a worse position than would it have been with our original text. And that is something which I think is worth spending some time reflecting to modulate our reaction without prejudice to the fact that in terms of process we must make, in our opinion at least, we must make it very clear that this is not the way to proceed, this is not good cooperation. But on substance, perhaps somebody could clarify to me. I know Hubert, Germany, tried to do it, but I must be a bit thick because I still didn't understand what is the real problem in the language that has been added by whomever has added it in the applicant guidebook. Thanks.
Thank you, EU Commission. So a proposal that we first establish what is the impact of the changes and then consider the option of requesting that it be deleted. That seems to be the logical way to approach that. Germany, you are next, please.
Yes, thank you for the USA and the Commission raising this question again. From my point of view, yes, it's a procedural question, that's clear. We were asked to give advice, we gave advice, and this advice was changed. I think it's more than fair that we are contacted before having a changed text within the guidebook. But the second one is a question of substance. And yes, it's my position that this is also substantial implications. Since if we followed the discussions we had during the last at least 2 years, what forms GAC advice, and we had of different parts of the community different understandings. What is GAC advice, and whether we have to name GAC advice, and what are the consequences of GAC advice. And I think we should be really clear that we have only one form of advice. The wording we use and the advice we give is clearly different, but we have only one form of advice, and the consequence, if the board does not follow that advice, is written in our bylaws. And the bylaws consultations process, and there is a real clear process if the board does not follow GAC advice. And the amendment now in the text is mixing up these positions where parts of the community may consider that this bylaws process is not necessary. And I think our common understanding, following the discussion we had in Dakar, is that this exactly the GAC does not want to have as an advice. We really want to have one legal consequence, let's say legal consequence or formal consequence of advice, and that we consider bylaws consultations after that, and not other forms of discussions and forms of solutions. And therefore, I think it's also a substantial issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Germany. Norway, please.
Thank you. The clearance of GAC advice has been the main issue between ICANN board and GAC for meeting after meeting after meeting. And we've been sitting, twisting and turning and trying to be clear and precise in our language. And we made this very clear, and we worked so hard on this. So it is a principal issue. They put us through a process where we work so hard to put this clear, to give them some clearance. They said, we don't understand your advice. It's not clear. The applicant is not clear what you mean by your advice. So we work on this, and we try to make it firm and to say that it is clear if you give an advice to this and that, it is a clear presumption that the applicant should not go through. And then to be met with, they meet us with this. Small changes. It looks small. Andrea, it goes to the substance. It says only what ICANN will say is the whole process that if they don't want to follow the GAC advice, they should give some rationale for their decision. But still, you should see that it weakens, in a way, the presumption for the applicant that if we have a strong and clear advice from GAC, the application should not go through. And then you put a line on in the end saying that, but if we don't want to follow that one, we should just give a rationale. It weakens the language that we have been working so hard on. So that is why we cannot force them to take this out, but at least we should have a discussion on this one, because it is important. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Norway. I see a clear agreement among colleagues about the fundamental nature of this issue, as it goes very, very much to the point about GAC advice. I have Australia, then EU Commission.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to colleagues who have gone before me, building on the comments from Germany and Norway. I also believe that this is a substantive issue, in addition to being a very clear procedural issue. As Norway said, there is a very strong language followed by a softer language. There is also, it is a in addition, and to me more troubling, it is a selective quotation of the bylaws in here. So I recall in Dakar, in regards to the second type of advice, we spent a considerable amount of time trying to decide what the essence of the bylaws were to summarise for this. And we came down to two parts. That is that if the board does not agree with GAC advice, there are two things really it needs to do. It needs to enter into a dialogue with the GAC first and put some effort into resolving it. And the second is that if it still doesn't agree after that, it will provide a rationale. What they have staff, I assume, or what has been provided in the first and the third example here is just the rationale. So what they have removed from here is the presumption that the board will enter into a dialogue with the GAC if it does not want to follow its advice. So I find this, as Hubert said, very troubling in that it appears on the face of it to try to suggest that there are different categories of advice with different responses. Sometimes they will enter into a dialogue with us to understand the scope of our concerns. Other times they won't, and they'll just give us a rationale. So it's quite troubling to me from a substantive point of view as well.
Thank you for that. Australia, EU Commission, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks to Norway and to Australia for taking the time to explain their concerns. I must say that I will not repeat the point on principle and procedure. I think we all agree fully on that. On the substance, and noting we agree with Australia that it's bizarre and troubling that I can mention quotes selectively, the bylaws. Having said that, the addition that we can see are, first of all, what they say is that the ICANN board is also expected to provide a rationale. I don't quite see the weakening that Norway sees in here. And on top of that, and this may be due to my background in to my national provenance, I have a background in continental law, so I tend to think about norms in terms of hierarchy. And in the ICANN system, there is, in my view, a clear hierarchy. There are the bylaws that take precedence over what the applicant guidebook can say. So, and this is just for the record, the Commission does not see a particular problem in the substance. However, since it seems to me that there are colleagues that do find problems in the substance, we would be absolutely in favor of asking the board, or whomever has to take this decision, the board, I believe, to remove the sentences that have been added on substantive and on procedural grounds. Just to be clear, we don't agree that they are such a big problem, but if there are problems with other members of the GAC and understand they are, we fully support the removal of these additional sentences. Thanks.
Thank you. EU Commission, Australia, please.
Just very quickly, look, to agree with the Commission, it would be my clear understanding as well that this would not in any way change the bylaws or trump the bylaws, so to speak. But what is concerning is that it is potentially confusing and misleading for applicants and people within the community. Applicants, the guidebook is so specific because it is meant to lay out very clear procedures and so on. So I agree that we should have confidence that the bylaws haven't been changed, but I think this is potentially confusing and misleading for the community.
Thank you, Australia. So what I would invite colleagues to do is to consider at some point for the communique, recognizing that we are going to be talking to the board about this, something like the GAC advises that the text be removed. So I just want you to reflect on that and see whether we can come to agreement that we do recognize that some GAC members are asking for deletion, while others may not be as concerned and making that same recommendation. So with that, let's come to a conclusion on that topic. Portugal, sorry, please.
Well, just a possible alternative to stating that in the communique. Couldn't we, so we don't know what was the origin of this change of the GAC wording. Couldn't we consider this topic in the meeting we are going to have with the board and to ask them to tell us what they think about it before we write in the communique what we should do about it?
Thank you, Portugal. Yes, and as we wouldn't conclude the communique until Wednesday and we meet with the board before then, we do have that opportunity. I just want to plant the seed among colleagues that I think that is the issue before us. I think regarding the procedural issue, we're in strong agreement. This is a fundamental point about communicating our advice and the fact that it is bylaws advice and so on. The other piece of it I'd just like us to be reflecting on before we come to draft the communique. All right. So at this point, let's move to the closed session. So I will ask all those in the room that are not GAC members or GAC member observers to leave the room, and we'll just take care of a few business items before we end for today.